So my name is Terry LePont, and together with my wife Bev, we live here just south of Montague, PEI. We've been here just a little over 5 years now, and have just celebrated our 48th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Yeah, just a week and a half ago. So I'm the executive director for Indigenous Pathways, which is this umbrella for the two ministries, iEmergence and NAITS, an Indigenous Learning Community. But most of my time is spent with NAITS, an Indigenous Learning Community, which is a graduate and postgraduate theological studies program.
Kind of more of a personal reflection. Could you help us understand just some of the realities as a Mi'kmaq person and what life is like that way and some of the unique opportunities and challenges that comes from that?
Well, so we're going to be here for several hours. Well, not unlike many in my generation, we grew up with a collage of experiences and understandings of what it meant to be a Mi'kmaq person that were handed down to us by our parents' generation in some respects. The historic prejudices towards Indigenous peoples in Canada that still exist in many places. The exclusionary experience, you're excluded on one hand from mainstream society, and yet on the other hand you're expected to integrate within mainstream society. And so there are these sort of very conflicting sorts of feelings and experiences about that. Where your parents tried very much to help you integrate and forget your indigeneity so that you could become functional, right, as it were, and accepted in mainstream society. And then on the other hand, attempts to do that being rebuffed by mainstream society because you were Indigenous.
Right.
So in a sense, if you'll pardon the expression, you were damned if you did and damned if you didn't.
Yeah.
So there were those sorts of conflicting feelings that you grew up with. If you lived in a mainstream identity, which I could because I looked the way I do, people were very accepting of you. But the moment you unpack the fact that you're a Mi'kmaq person, it's like, they would distance themselves, or there would be some new frame that they would put around your life. For a lot of our folk who not because of lack of competence, but developed skill, if you will, who weren't able to navigate that, it was incredibly oppressive experience, an incredibly demeaning experience at times. You felt completely incompetent and unacceptable. And for me as a follower of the Jesus way, I learned to follow Jesus from Euro-Canadian folk,
sure,
who had followed Jesus years and years and years already before us. And as we set about to follow Jesus, it was implicit and explicit in the way we experienced it. You needed to be Euro-Canadian in your lifestyle, your understandings of culture, et cetera, in order to be an authentic follower of Jesus.
Right.
If you talked about culture other than Euro-Canadian culture, you were looked at with suspicion.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't be that and be a follower of Jesus.
Right.
And so you were forced into this choice, either be a follower of Jesus or be an Indigenous person, because you couldn't be those same,
right,
those two things together.
Yes.
And so that was our early experience, and so we fell in love with Jesus, so we just did what they suggested.
Sure.
And it was not until I was working as a youth chaplain with the Agassiz Center for Youth in Manitoba where I began to really question that, because I was inviting kids in the youth detention center who are Indigenous to do the same thing.
Right.
And it became really obvious that that was foolish.
Mm.
And it wasn't what God asked us to
do.
It wasn't part of the preaching of the gospel, and it wasn't part of what it meant to become followers of Jesus. So we asked questions like, why would God call us to leave one sin-stained culture to enter another sin-stained,
sure,
culture?
Yeah.
Prior to that, there was this imagining that Western culture, Euro-Canadian or Euro-American or whatever, was uniquely disposed to being Christian.
Right.
what was intriguing for me was how the church could move from Acts 15 in the experience of the Gentile church as it emerges, being told by the believers from the sect of the Pharisees that they needed to become Jews in order to become followers of Jesus, how that could turn around in 100 years and the exact opposite experience be true 100 years later, where the Gentiles were saying to the Jews, you need to be Gentile in order to be followers of Jesus.
Wow.
And then if you examine the trajectory of the church from that point to the present, in fact, in some cases, you find that continuing phenomenon.
How has the church dropped the ball? Where gleams of hope and how the church operates today?
I think the way forward is to have a conversation, not unlike what we're doing right here.
Sure.
Have a conversation that isn't filled with suspicion
as
a first lens,
where
there's an immediate question. I wonder if he's a real Christian. Could you give me your testimony?
Right. Yeah.
You know, which I've gotten, I don't know how many times over the years, when I say something that flies in the face of what people in the Western church believe, they almost inevitably want to, you know, when were you baptized?
Mm.
Could you tell me how you came to faith?
Yeah.
As if somehow I'm not an authentic follower of Jesus. So conversations like this are helpful.
Mm.
Yeah. So I applaud you for doing this. There are a lot of people who still have the idea that was then, this is now, get over it.
Sure.
And inevitably I find myself saying, which one do you want us to get over?
Mm.
Since it wasn't just one event or one circumstance, and since it wasn't in just 1 year, but it's been over a period of 150 years. I invite people to look at, for example, the legislation in Canada that dealt with and still deals with Indigenous people that is very prejudicial.
Mm.
And then ask, what do you want us to get over?
Yeah.
And then the second thing I would say when people say get over it and get on with it, I'd say, well, that's a view of time that suggests that as soon as we move through the present moment, everything in the past has no relevance.
Yeah.
And that's certainly not true. And for Christians, we should think differently. Mm-hmm. Since the very text that we consult on a daily basis in our devotions and preach from on a Sunday by Sunday basis is a text of the past.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a text of the present,
right,
in terms of its when it was written,
right,
in terms of the events it writes about, in terms of the people it writes about. Those are all dead and gone. Why do we continue to consult it? Because it speaks to us in the present moment.
Right.
And because the Spirit enlivens it in the present moment. How much more so our history as a people together?
Mm.
How much more should we consult our past?
Right.
And say, how did we get here?
Mm.
What does it mean for us today?
Yeah.
So instead of the future focus that the Western church has had,
sure,
and its eschatology has driven it,
yes,
almost painstakingly driven into an unknown and unknowable future, with then a consequent ignoring of the past, which they see as behind it. Let's bring the past out in front and ask some authentic
right
questions.
Yeah.
How did we get here?
Yeah.
What did we do that got us here? And how do we unpack that so that we don't do it again?
Right.
So I always say to my students, it's not that we won't make mistakes as we move forward, but let's at least have the integrity to make new ones. A significant error that we make as human beings is an assumption that if we acknowledge something took place, that we can now move into this new place without understanding that the consequences of what happened are still with us.
Yes.
Like we're still living those out. Many Indigenous peoples today are still living out the consequences of those things. And so to say, okay, let's start fresh from this point forward. Now that we've acknowledged it, let's start fresh and move on. Is very unrealistic, because it doesn't allow that these consequences continue to impact the lives of Indigenous people. I think as we move forward in Indigenous and non-Indigenous relationships, it's that kind of thinking that we need to engage. And what were the circumstances there? How do we deal with those so that moving forward, we give everyone the opportunity to live into health and well-being?
Mm.
I think that's what it would look like.